Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast conveniently at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here. Hope your Friday's treating you well. Hope you're set up for an epic weekend. We've got a lot to go over today, a lot of news and notes that kind of came out over the course of the last 24 hours-ish, and then I want to get to our final NFL draft deep dive here. I still have a bunch of undrafted free agents that I want to go over. I'm going to do a dive into the UDFA class because there's 10 of them. I think I'm going to do it all in one episode. I've got through four of them already. I've got six to go from my film study, I should say. I'm hoping that comes out on Sunday. Saturday is going to be Isaiah Simmons and a deep dive on him. But this is our last draft pick that we get to go over. So it's a little bit bittersweet, but we're going to go over John Williams here in just a moment. But before we get there, let's get to, first of all, Iconic Vision 2020 and Max Kingsky. Thank you so much for signing up to become brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, highly recommend it. If membership's not your thing, just make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Those things help out the channel a ton. Tell a friend about the show. Any of those things really, really help, and we really, really appreciate it. But yeah, thank you again to Iconic Vision 2020 and Max Kinski for becoming all new members. Let's get to those news and notes. Let's start with our daily Jaire Alexander update. This one was from one Peter Schrager, who is on the Pat McAfee show. And it's still weird to say Peter Schrager of ESPN after all of his time at NFL Network, but Peter Schrager of ESPN. And he said that he actually sat down with Matt LaFleur prior to the draft when he was in Green Bay, went to dinner with Matt LaFleur, or at least had dinner with Matt LaFleur. I don't know if they went somewhere or ate at Lambeau or ate at Matt's house. I'm not sure. He did not clarify. What do you think they had? I don't know. Either way, they had dinner together and talked to Matt and had some interesting things to say about Jaire, saying, quote, Matt LaFleur said that they were in a good place with Jaire. That's not, actually, I should not quote that. This is not the exact quote, but the note here was Matt LaFleur said that they were in a good place with Jaire. Peter Schrager said that it's in a lot better place than it was previously. Said that there was a place for Jaire Alexander in Green Bay. That was Peter Schrager saying that, not Matt LaFleur, just to clarify. And then he went on to say, this is again Peter Schrager, quote, I don't know how it nets itself out, and quote, we'll see how it figures itself out. So once again, this is another one where everyone except apparently me, when I said 0.01%, wants to leave this out of like, oh, we don't know exactly how this is going to end up yet. But this is like the third consecutive one now, third consecutive one now where it seems to be leaning more in the direction of Jaire coming back. There was the initial Rob Domofsky one that said, hey, both sides are, at least both sides are now working together. And there seems to be an option where this could be a amicable resolution, and that Jaire could stay a Green Bay Packer. So that was the first one. Then Jeremy Fowler had his reports just the other day that said, you know, things were kind of trending in this direction. And now we heard from Peter Schrager that's basically saying again that things are actually in a good place with Jaire, and that, things are, again, potentially working themselves towards a place where Jaire Alexander could stay in Green Bay. So we're full on board in this direction as of this point in time. So again, as Peter Schrager said at the end of his update here, I don't know how it nets itself out, and we'll see how it figures itself out, but this is the third consecutive one that seems to be trending in that direction. And again, we've gone over this ad nauseum, like 1,000 episodes now. A lot of positives that could come out of this if Jaire's back in Green Bay. Certainly some negatives if he cannot stay healthy, but this corner room is unquestionably better if he's in it and he's healthy. So that's, again, the best case scenario all the way along. From beginning of the offseason up until now, has always been, if you can get him back and he can stay healthy, best case scenario, I'd assume that that will come with some sort of contract restructure if that's the case. I'm assuming that's what they're probably working on, is trying to figure out that compromise that makes sense both for Jaire and his side and the Packers and their side. But hopefully we get some resolution on this sooner rather than later. But that is your daily update on as Jaire Alexander turns and this entire saga continues to be just updated daily at this point, and we'll see what tomorrow brings, and maybe something new, or maybe we get that final update on Jair Alexander. All right. The other piece of news that kind of came out, and Justice Mosqueda initially sort of kind of brought this up the other day on our show, right? Basically saying like, hey, I think there could be something here with Romeo where maybe he ends up not in Green Bay, whether it be via trade or he said release. I don't think it could ever get to that point. But again, I haven't exactly been batting 100 here with potential releases, non-releases here. As far as, updates after that, Andrew Filippone said that the Steelers have inquired about Romeo Doubs. So that would usually mean some sort of phone call to Green Bay asking if he's available via trade. Who knows how that ended? There were a lot of people from the Pittsburgh side of things that were saying Andrew doesn't have any sources on this stuff. I don't know. Who knows? I don't care. But there was that out there that Andrew Filippone said that the Steelers have inquired about Romeo Doubs. Whether they did or didn't, we don't know how Green Bay responded, whether they're like, yeah, we're good. No thanks, but no thanks. Or like, oh, interesting. What do you have to offer? We don't know if there's any substantial talks there. There's been no other report of Romeo Doubs' interest from the Steelers side of things or from any other team side of things. And then Peter Schrager, once again, on the Pat McAfee show said, the Packers are very happy with their wide receiver room and there seems to be no issue with Romeo Doubs whatsoever. Anything that happened at the beginning of last year with the one game suspension has been put behind them and there's no longer any concern from the Packers' point of view. And again, are very happy with their wide receiver room. So again, I don't know if that puts that entire conversation to bed entirely. Yeah, I'm sure everyone has a price, right? If the Steelers offered something that Green Bay couldn't say no to, I'm sure they would listen. But it seems, again, per Peter Schrager, that Romeo Doubs isn't going anywhere. This makes the most sense. You can figure out and find a pathway where trading Romeo Doubs is at least understandable from a conversation standpoint, right? The concussions and then the, you know, one game suspension this past year are probably those two biggest things, but also the raise to $3+ million this year and now having some savings if you move on. There's also the fact that he's probably not going to be back in 2026, but again, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of time between now and then. The fact that you have multiple players who could get a compensatory pick and you can only get four, and they probably have more than four that could potentially be signed with other teams next year. So if you could get something now, you kind of cut that off and there could still be four comp picks coming to you next year, depending on who all leaves in free agency. There's a lot of layers to this, but the reason I still think it makes sense is Christian Watson's out. We don't know for how long. Probably week 14-ish is again, sort of the last update that we got from Christian Watson's dad. He's out. Now all of a sudden, Romeo Doubs is traded away. You just brought in two rookies, Matthew Golden, Savion Williams. That's great. But you have no idea what they're going to become. They could be unbelievable. They could take a while to ramp up. And let's just put it on that side of things where, hey, maybe it takes a little bit of time for them to kind of find their groove, right? That brings you down to Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Malik Heath, Mecole Hardman, Bo Melton, until those other rookies get sort of up to speed. It just leaves you very short, very quick, and probably not where you want to be. And the other thing too is Romeo and Jordan Love do have a little bit of a connection. I'm not talking Rodgers Jordy or Rodgers Devontae here. I'm not talking at that level, but it does seem when Jordan gets into trouble or there's a red zone opportunity or must have it situation, he does have a little bit of a further connection with Romeo Doubs than he has with some of the other wide receivers. To me, it just makes sense to bring him back, figure out the comp pick stuff in the future, figure out if you want to bring him back in the future. This is a team that's trying to win right now, and having good players is a important aspect of that. And it just feels like, hey, they kind of filled out this wide receiver room in a fun way, immediately undercutting it by moving on from Romeo. Doesn't feel like you're doing that any service at this point in time. Could they do it? Sure. Again, we talked about the reasons why. If it were me, I would probably just stick with Romeo for now and then, you know, figure out whatever path you need to go down the road and let that path take its place when it needs to take its place. Right now, I feel like everything's good to go and you don't really need to mess with anything that doesn't need to be messed with. Then we've got the update that everyone's been waiting for. Not the Jair situation, not the Romeo Doubs situation, the Taylor Algirsma situation. So per Justin Dunk and Zach Cruz, Taylor Algirsma is going back to Green Bay, and I'm assuming he's there now, or at least was there. I don't know the exact timing of this, but he was going back to Green Bay to talk with the Packers, and Algirsma's side of things were hopeful for a contract, but nothing is guaranteed yet. There was the initial report that the Packers were set to make Taylor Algersma a contract offer. And then Pro Football Talk, for some weird reason, cited that article, which never said that a contract was imminent or that it was going to get signed. And they ran with it and said the Packers are signing Taylor Algersma. That is yet to be substantiated by anybody. And it now seems like, again, per multiple sources, that Algersma is going back to Green Bay to talk with the Packers and work out potentially the parameters of a contract or what that might look like. It's a little bit of an interesting situation. And again, we know Algersma has the potential rookie tryout with Buffalo this weekend. So I would assume if something's going to get done, it's going to get done on Friday, because I'm sure if it doesn't, he's going to want to attend that rookie minicamp in Buffalo, or maybe he's already on his way there. We'll see what that entails. Remember, he was also drafted 18th overall by the CFL. It's a weird situation because usually if a team has any interest in a player from a tryout, they just sign him in a vet minimum 3-year deal, nothing more to it, and that's it. And the player's ecstatic to get that offer. So the fact that Algersma is in a little bit of a unique situation here where he's got this other tryout, plus he's got the CFL as a, you know, sort of other option out there, this does seem maybe a little bit different. I don't know if Algersma is holding out for some signing bonus, maybe something really small, but just anything, 50K, 100K, whatever that might be. And if he doesn't get it, he's willing to say, go try it with Buffalo, or I'll just play in the CFL. Or if Algersma is coming back legitimately hoping for any offer so he can accept it, and Green Bay is just doing a little bit of extra dotting the I's and crossing the T's, it's tough to say. Usually, again, these things come together a lot quicker when you want to sign somebody. Not sure if there's, you know, what the issue is to get to that point. But as of now, as of recording this, Taylor Algersma, still not a Packer, but seems like he could be potentially sooner rather than later. Hey friends, Andy Herman here. Now that the draft is over, there's plenty of time to focus in on the basketball playoffs, hockey playoffs, and of course the heart of the baseball regular season. And you know what else it means? It means it's time to add your favorite players from the diamond into your Prize Picks lineup. Whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs, take your pick on more or less to get your shot to win up to 1,000 times your cash today. Right now, you can sign up for Prize Picks and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's absolutely guaranteed. So do you think Aaron Judge is going to hit another home run this week? Or how about Juan Soto with more than one hit in his next game? Cook up your hot takes with your friends and win real money when you run your game on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Yelich to finally get hot for Milwaukee, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on options for Aaron Judge as well because he is out of his mind right now. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly on your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks, run your game. Then last but not least, before we get to John Williams, Panthers made a semi-surprising move on Thursday by releasing edge rusher Jadeveon Clowney. Now, my first fear is that he's a Detroit Lion. It makes all the sense in the world. Like, it's frustratingly, maddeningly, like, just a really good fit there, and it's exactly what they need, right? They've been looking for something opposite Aiden Hutchinson. Hasn't really presented itself. You know, they go defensive tackle in the first round of the draft. They bring back Marcus Davenport, but he's never been really able to stay healthy. Za'Darius Smith is gone. They've needed somebody opposite Aiden Hutchinson, and this seems like a glorious one-year fit for the Lions to get Jadeveon Clowney to get to go to a team like Detroit where he gets to play opposite Aiden Hutchinson. That is a beautiful spot to be because Hutchinson's going to get all the attention, and that sucks if you're a Packers fan. It's not signed, sealed, and delivered. That's just my hypothesis here. There have been some people that have floated the idea, clearly, of Green Bay and whether or not it would make sense for the Packers to sign Jadeveon Clowney. Would it make some sense? Yeah, absolutely. I think you can clearly get from point A to point B and say, yeah, it definitely could make some sense. You guys know Goody. You know, you know how these things work. The Packers are going to trust their new group of defensive ends to be what they're looking for and probably not go aggressively in that direction. I mean, they got six guys, maybe even seven, right, that they have fighting out for this thing. Rashawn Gary, that you know they've already talked about over and over how they're expecting a big breakout from LVN. I think they like Brenton Cox. They are bringing back, as of now, Kingsley Nigbari. And then you also have, you know, Baron Sorrell, who they just drafted in the fourth round. And then you've got Colin Oliver in the fifth round. Plus, you've got a guy like Aaron Mosby, who was on the roster last year. I just don't see Green Bay actually doing it. Could they? Maybe. Sure. I'd be all for it if they wanted to go in that direction. Would certainly seem to help out the pass rush. And he's a really good edge defender, too. The pass rush took a little bit of a step back this past year, but I still think it's in there. And then, you know, if Jair's back, all of a sudden, like, man, wow, that changes things really quick. Jair's back in the corner room. Jadeveon Clowney's in the defensive end room. All right. You're cooking with gas now. You've got everything you need. There's outside of maybe, again, defensive tackle backing up Kenny, you really kind of hit everything. I just don't see it. I would not predict it. I think he probably ends up somewhere else. Detroit makes a ton of sense. And I don't see Green Bay being aggressive going after him, but I would love to be wrong. And if he's in Green Bay and he becomes another edge rusher option, again, Kingsley and Igbari probably in a tough situation. You know, Brenton Cox is going to have to really earn his way on, but you can find a way to make it work, no question. Just would expect that some other team is probably going to offer him a monetary value that Green Bay probably doesn't want to go up to, would be my guess. But we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it, of course, and if anything does come to fruition, if he does end up a Green Bay Packer, we'll certainly be right here covering it for you on the Packaday Podcast, 365 days a year, per usual. All right, let's get to John Williams. Sorry, lots of updates today, but I had to talk Jair, Romeo Doubs, a little bit of Elgersma, and of course, Jadeveon Clowney as well. But now we get to get to our final deep dive of the day, and that, of course, is John Williams. Seventh round pick, their final seventh round pick, their eighth pick overall. 6'4", 322 pounds, offensive lineman out of Cincinnati. I say offensive lineman because he played tackle at Cincinnati. The expectation is he probably kicks into guard, but we'll see where he kind of practices. And of course, they throw these guys in multiple positions to begin with and kind of see where they stick. So I'm sure he'll, you know, potentially get some time at tackle as well, but most people believe he's going to be a guard in the NFL. Played all 5 years at Cincinnati, is a fifth-year senior, just turned 23 in January. 7.63 relative athletic score at offensive tackle, but a 9.07 relative athletic score at guard. He did not do the vertical or the broad jump. 66th percentile height, 82nd percentile weight, 85th percentile bench press, 82nd percentile 40-yard dash, 79th percentile 10-yard split, 72nd percentile short shuttle, 55th percentile three cone, 75th percentile arm length, 79th percentile wingspan, and 97th percentile hand size. I mean, that's a great relative athletic score chart, right? Again, didn't do the vertical or the broad jump, but 90th percentile athlete and tested well in everything. I mean, the worst was the three cone at 55th percent. It's still good, still above average. So a really good spider chart, if you will, for John Williams, specifically at guard. But even at tackle, he was a 76th percentile athlete, so not terrible there either. Some athletic comps of note from the relative athletic score site: Carl Nix, TJ Lang, and John Simpson. TJ Lang, nice noteworthy one there. And then per mock draftable, Spencer Long, Taylor Morton, and Marshall Newhouse, another former Packer. Those are some athletic comps. I don't know if he's going to quite be TJ Lang. I kind of like the Taylor Morton one, to be honest. But that's, you know, again, these are just athletic comps, not the exact type of player that they are, but some fun, you know, real legitimate good NFL players in that list. If you could become anything like them, you know, you would certainly sign up for that. And I think you would take what he would become if he becomes a Carl Nix, a TJ Lang, a Taylor Morton, a Spencer Long, even John Simpson, Marshall Newhouse as a late seventh round pick. You would certainly take that productivity again, late in the seventh round. All right, PFF 2020 played only 40 snaps at a 53.2 grade, 2021, 109 snaps with a 45.6 grade, and in 2022, 36 snaps with a 67.6 grade. The takeaway here is barely played in 2020, 2021, or 2022. Then in 2023, started to get much more snaps, 820 snaps with a 69.9 grade, including a 75.4 pass block grade and a 64.2 run block grade. And then this past year in 2024, 971 snaps, 70.4 grade, 73.3 pass block, 63.6 run block. In 2023, had 413 pass pro snaps, allowed two sacks, 16 pressures, a 97.4 pass block efficiency, and a 3.9% pressure percentage. Then in 2024, 564 pass pro snaps, two sacks again, 14 pressures, 98.9 pass block efficiency with a 2.5% pressure percentage, which is really good. In his career, 1,061 pass pro snaps, six sacks allowed, seven hits, 21 hurries, for 34 total pressures, again on 1,061 pass pro snaps. Some notes. He was Dane Brugler's 25th ranked offensive tackle. So he had him as a tackle. Again, the expectation is that he's likely going to be a guard in the NFL. He was 279th on the consensus big board. He started playing football at the age of 4, played in the East-West Shrine Game, and that was something that we're going to talk about a little bit on the negative side of things. It's funny because Brugler noted that he had a good week of practice. I thought the practice tape was up and down, but the game was where it was a bit more of a struggle. We'll talk about that. Also, was an aerospace engineering major. That's pretty freaking sweet. Again, probably indicating he's a pretty smart dude. And he was in Green Bay for a top 30 visit prior to the draft. Let's get to some strengths and weaknesses. The strengths, the first one we kind of talked about already, it's just the pass block efficiency. He has started 2 full seasons at left tackle and only allowed 3 total sacks over those 2 seasons. The overall technique and footwork and those sort of things can use some improvement. No questions asked. But I talk about on the flip side, right? As a pass rusher, sometimes guys just know how to get to the quarterback. They're hunters. Take all the relative athletic score away. Take some of the technique stuff. Take all whatever it is that you want to usually point to and say, this amounts to a good pass rusher, this formula. Sometimes there's guys that just say, screw all that. I know how to get to the quarterback. I don't care that my arms are shorter. I don't care that I don't have the craziest bend or the 40 or whatever it might be. I just know how to get to the quarterback and I'm going to find my way there. It's a hunter's mentality. They got it. They know how to do it. Sometimes on the flip side, and I kind of call this the Mark Tauscher, it's not the prettiest thing in the world. It's not the most beautiful body with, you know, everything that you're looking for athletically. It's not going to be a 9.98 relative athletic score. It's just somebody that knows how to come in, compete their ass off, and knows how to win and make it so that the guy across from me is not going to get to the quarterback. And with John Williams, there's a little bit of that. It's not perfect. It's not exactly what you're looking for. It's not teaching tape stuff. He does have the athleticism. We've talked over that already, although not quite as much at tackle as it was at guard. But he just found a way to make sure that the dude across from him was not getting to his quarterback. And guess what? That's kind of the name of the game. So I'm not saying he's the next Mark Tauscher or anything like that. And again, very strong athlete. But one of the biggest strengths here, just from a college standpoint, is, again, only 3 sacks allowed at left tackle in 2 full seasons at Cincinnati. That is definitely noteworthy. Also has massive hands. In fact, he had the biggest hands of anyone at the combine. And when he uses them effectively, which is a big caveat that we'll talk about, but he just gets those big mitts inside of you and he just owns you at that point. It's, you know, the man hand Seinfeld episode. He's got big, physical, juicy man hands coming inside. They're getting into your chest plate. And if they get there, good night, nurse. It is over. He is going to dominate that rep. He's got the grip strength. He's got the meaty claws to dig into you and just dominate that rep. It's all about placement for him, which has been a struggle, but he gets those inside and it's almost entirely game over at that point. Down blocking is probably his biggest strength. Again, he's not a mauler in the run game. He's not going to be somebody that is definitely just bowling people over. But when he gets the opportunity to down block, he does it with intensity and physicality. And again, it's one of his blocks that he does a really great job of, and it stands out on tape. It's a block that most offensive linemen are good at and like doing, right? Because it's a little bit easier than some of the alternatives, but he's good at it. You can tell he takes it seriously and he likes washing people out of plays when he gets the opportunity to do that. He does show the ability to recover when he gets beat. I know that's like sort of kind of the backhanded compliment of positives. It's like, well, he got beat. You know what? I would have preferred he just didn't get beat. But if you are going to get beat, it's great that you have the ability to recover, still get involved in that play, and give your quarterback a puncher's chance to maybe escape that situation. Yes. In an ideal world, you didn't get beat in the first place. But if you do get beat, it's not carte blanche to just say, well, got beat. That's it. The best of the best, and Bakhtiari was always great at this, in the rare instance that he did get beat, he still had the ability to recover and go get that guy before he got to the quarterback. And that was always something I really admired about David Bakhtiari. And if you have the, you know, opportunity to make that play even after you're beat on your initial, you know, whether it's, you know, because of a slow get off or your stance or your footwork or your hands, whatever it might have been, you get beat, no big deal, reverse course, get back there, still get a hand on him, push him hopefully outside that quarterback arc, allow your quarterback to step up and maybe still deliver that pass or just escape pressure and maybe get outside the pocket a little bit. It's a valuable thing to have. Again, you would love if they just didn't get beat, but if you do, recover, and that's exactly what John Williams does. He has good movement ability with easy ability to get to the second level. He can get there. He can pull wherever you need him to get to. He's going to get to his spots. He can seal you. He can, again, especially on the second level, that's where he gets some of those more advantageous matchups with his 320-pound frame and gets to go against some of those linebackers and see maybe a little bit more of that finishing ability, but he can get to wherever he needs to get to. He's got great movement skills. Extremely limited penalties. Did not commit penalties really at all in college. Does a really nice job on double teams and combo blocks. That might be another one where you say, oh, great. Well, he's double teaming. They should win that rep. Man, I cannot tell you how frustrating it is to see double teams and combo blocks in the NFL just executed poorly. Those are the ones you should win. You should be able to move people off their spot. And almost always it's not, you know, due to anything other than just lack of execution. It's just attention to detail. And for Williams and Cincinnati, they did a really good job of it. I thought Williams really worked well with the teammates, you know, next to him, worked on that double team. And then on a lot of those plays, helping on the double team, getting that guy off his spot, then climbing to the second level, picking somebody else off. He gave great effort in those situations. It was something that really stood out on tape for him. Then last but not least, I thought some of his best blocks are on pulls, picking off linebackers or edge rushers. So pulling across that edge rusher, a linebacker, or somebody's coming across and he blows up those players. Can tell a lot about an offensive lineman based on how they go about, same thing with the defensive lineman, about how they go attacking those plays. And for an offensive lineman, I love seeing somebody that's going to come across and set that play up with physicality and intensity and sometimes even some violence. There's going to be some car crashes, some big time collisions on those type of plays. Williams doesn't take it easy. He goes full throttle and he's the one that's usually the hammer and not the nail in those situations. Let's get to some weaknesses. He doesn't have a bad play demeanor, but I just wanted a little bit more nasty and a little bit more violence. He's kind of like, you know, seems like somebody you'd want to be friends with. And for me, I like my offensive linemen pissed off, angry, not, you know, cantankerous. You don't want to be around them. If you're around them for anything more than a couple seconds, you feel uncomfortable. It's like, for those of you who are Harry Potter fans, it's like a Dementor's by you. It just, the happiness is sucked out of you. You don't feel, you know, anything besides cold and darkness. Like, that's how I want my offensive lineman playing. I would love to see just a little bit more violence, a little bit more nasty out of John Williams. You will see some bending at the waist and some lunging. Again, it's a huge no-no for any offensive line play. You want to stay balanced. You know, you want to get low into your, you know, stance, you know, get your knees underneath you, play with good bend, not at the waist with the knees, knee bend, not waist bend. Knee bend is going to allow you to get where you want to go, right? It's going to keep you spry on your feet. Think of like ready position in baseball as a shortstop, whatever. That's where you want to be. You don't want to be bent over at the waist. Nothing good is happening when you're lunging or bent over at the waist. And it's such a natural thing, right? You're trying to go get that guy and you want to get your hands on him and you start reaching over or bending over and you're just so off balance and they can use that momentum against you. Just something that he really needs to clean up at the NFL level. The next thing is maintaining those blocks. Now, again, when he gets those big meaty claws inside on you and holds that rep up, like he's really, really good, but it's super inconsistent and his hands and his placement of his hands needs a lot of work. But I do think when he gets to that point where it's more consistent, he's going to control more of those reps. But until then, you can tell he's having a really tough time maintaining those blocks. Fix that hand placement and you're going to be in a really good spot. But until he does that, it's been a bit of an issue. I thought the Shrine game was a problem going up against some better competition. Again, differing minds here. Brugler thought he had a good week of practice. I thought he got beat quite a bit at practice, but either way, in the game itself, it did not look pretty. And this is something I noted actually before the draft in the when we were doing the top 30 visits and Williams was on that list. I actually liked his tape at Cincinnati a decent amount. Then I got to the Shrine game. I'm like, ugh, like that doesn't look the part. Now, he could have just had a bad week. And even if he did struggle there, that's not what you're looking at from a scouting standpoint. You're not evaluating him on what he did in a game. You're evaluating him on what he can become. And there's plenty of good tape at Cincinnati that shows what he can become. And again, he's going to get the opportunity at guard likely in the NFL, not at tackle, which I think is going to help him quite a bit. But he did have a tough week or at least a tough game in the Shrine game. And I didn't think the practices were as great as maybe they were chalked up to be. Technique, footwork, hand placement. We talked about the hand placement, but the footwork gets a little bit choppy at times. These are tough things to master at the college level, and hopefully you get a PhD on it in the NFL. But his footwork definitely needs some overall work, and just getting out on the perimeter a little bit easier. I'll say this too. I think if he moves inside to guard, it's going to help mitigate some of that, but he still can work on his overall technique, his footwork, and his hand placement. I will also say that at times he gets just lazy hands. It's just like he gets them out there. He's got these big hands, and it feels like he's more sometimes almost like patty caking rather than really digging in and playing with that physical aggression with those hands. Again, you don't want to get them outside. You don't want to get holding. You want to get those hands inside with a heavy punch, with some violence to it, then control, get the hands inside the pads, and just dominate that rep. And I thought sometimes his handwork just got really, really lazy, and I wanted to just, again, see a little bit more physicality with it. Did think he was susceptible to speed around the edge. Again, hopefully the move to guard kind of mitigates some of that. He will get bull rush back into the quarterback. Needs to probably add a little bit more of an anchor to his game just to make sure that that doesn't happen. Get a little bit more sand in the pants, if you will. And then the other thing here is he projects as a guard and he projects as relatively versatile, but he only played left tackle in college. So while he projects as somebody that might be able to play multiple spots, he has not shown the ability to do it because he only played left tackle in college. Those are my weaknesses. Some other notes. This is a hardcore traits versus technique draft pick. The traits are there. He's got great movement ability, good size. He fits perfectly at guard. And in all, every trait that you want is there. Okay. It's all there for him. The size, the speed, the strength, the athleticism, all of it right there. It's good to go. It's tailor-made for NFL guard, probably left guard. But the technique needs a lot of work. The footwork and the hand placement specifically. If you can get that down, you're golden. And it's so much easier to teach that than it is the traits that you can't teach. So I get it. Seventh round guy with some upside here that I think could potentially be a starter in the league if he hits the right way, going to a team that knows how to take these college left tackles, move them inside, and they have a ton of success with those type of players. Makes sense. But it's going to definitely need some more technique work to have all those traits come out. And if they do, then you end up with a really nice offensive lineman that can probably end up starting for you in this league. It's going to take some time, I think, to get there, though. Matt LaFleur said that they had a much higher grade than a seventh round pick on Williams. So that's noteworthy. Whether that's a fourth, a fifth, I'm not sure, but much higher would seem something higher than a seventh or a sixth. And then Brandon Thorne, who I think is, if not the ultimate offensive line guru out there in those social media streets right now, he's in the top two or three for sure. He had a fourth round grade on John Williams. Fourth round grade. And again, he is really, in fact, I think he had a fourth round grade on Anthony Belton as well. It's just kind of interesting. Got a second rounder that he had a fourth round grade on, got a seventh rounder that he had a fourth round grade on. But he really liked John Williams enough to pick him, you know, somewhere in that 125-ish range. Green Bay got him in round seven, late round seven. So potentially some really good value here for the Packers. What he can bring to Green Bay? Versatility. I do think despite him only playing left tackle in college, I think he can play left tackle, left guard, right tackle. I think that's possible. I think he also mentioned that he has done a little bit of work at center. Not sure that's his ultimate fit, but maybe not impossible. I think there is some long-term developmental upside here. And again, these are the type of players Green Bay's had a ton of success with. I think it makes all the sense to take him in the seventh and work on that upside and see if you can make him into a starter down the road. This has been their MO. Taking these tackles, moving them to guard, and having a ton of success with it. Hopefully Williams can be the latest in the line of draft and develop offensive linemen in Green Bay. I think he brings some depth and competition to that line. And I don't think he's somebody that's ready to play in 2025. But if you said that he kind of redshirted for a year or two, was ready to play in 2027, wouldn't put it past him. I think that's within the realm of possibility. So develop him for a couple of years, whether that's on the practice squad or the active roster, and then see what he can become. And I would have the target date of kind of 2027 is hopefully a time where he's ready to be competing for a spot along the starting offensive line. I think that's within the realm of reason. All right, my final thoughts here. You are drafting somebody that's got great traits and had great pass block efficiency in college and played for Cincinnati, like not a small school. That's a good bet to take. Protected the quarterback in college at a pretty high degree, has great athletic traits, and now you're going to bring him to a system that's done a great job of developing these exact type of players. Makes all the sense. He's going to get some NFL level coaching. It's easy to take a flyer on a player like this in the seventh round. I think it, again, makes all the sense. And Green Bay has had so much success with players like this in the past that it does leave you excited about the possibility that maybe they found another seventh round day three draft pick that can come in and be a starter down the road. He's going to have to put in the time on his technique, but the traits are there. He's going to get NFL coaching now. I think he's hungry for it. Just a little bit more violence and a little bit more technique work. And I think you've got a really nice offensive lineman on your hand. Like this pick here for Green Bay. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me for all of these deep dives. I do have a playlist available if you missed any of them. Make sure to check out Happy Hour on Friday, 3 p.m. Central Time. We'll go for about an hour answering all your questions. That's open to everyone. But for now, appreciate you guys a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members. Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Kohner, Carla Delgado, Willie Winkle-Stinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Hewell, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys tomorrow, or hopefully today, at the happy hour. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.